swinging a high drive into center field. Hits at the wall. It is gone! Hassis does it again.
Again.
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied!
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over!
The Red Sox have won the World Championship!
Welcome back to Play Tessie. It's episode 152. This is the official Red Sox podcast of WEI. Before we get going, like, rate, subscribe, 5 stars, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Check us out on YouTube on the WEI channel. You can find our Play Tessie playlist there. It's got all the episodes. Hit the thumbs up on them and obviously subscribe to WEI and find us on the socials at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. Here with Sammy and here with Papa, we're joined by a very special guest, our favorite Rob Bradford, host of Baseball Isn't Boring, WEI's own, the podfather himself, the father of this podcast, if we're being honest with you. So, Rob, thank you for joining us.
EA Baseball.
It's my favorite line.
Thanks baseball. For the enthusiasm. Let's go. Bradford's fired up.
It's a slow build, man. It's a slow build. That's good. I mean, come on. You guys should know that. Come on.
So, what are we going to talk about today? There's, like, nothing happening in the baseball world.
I want to talk about your dreams, the dreams that you just explained to me.
I've got many Red Sox-based dreams that may also involve other things. I don't know.
I'm blowing up the show sheet.
Blowing up the show sheet.
You guys are talking about the show sheet. I'm like, this is not what I taught you guys. No show sheets. Come on. Like, so I'm blowing it up. I'm saying I want to hear about Gordo's dream about his dog pooping out things and, and Max Fried's contract and... Yeah, that's what the people want.
Standard baseball talk.
Standard baseball talk. The more poop that comes out of my dog's ass, the more dollars Max Fried makes with the Red Sox.
Yeah, that's science.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this podcast, Gordo actually had a dream that was what he just described.
Oh, yeah, that's real.
He texted all of us this, and he was super excited about it. It was great. Real dream that he had.
Yeah, real dream. And my dreams don't usually stick. I rarely remember my dreams. But when you dream something like that up, it's unforgettable. I was thinking about it all morning.
Same.
It's too bad that it wasn't... Because I like to think that dreams... I like to think a couple things. I like to think that history repeats itself. And I like to think that dreams lead to things. And I really wish that the dream was... I mean, granted, I would love for the Red Sox to sign Max Fried. But I really wish that the dream was about Soto. Then that could be my hope. Because, like... Newsflash, despite all of the reports and optimism and everything going out, I'm still not particularly optimistic about the Sox and Soto. I can go... Okay, here's what I want to do. I want to quickly run through everything that happened or everything that's been reported, and then we'll just go from there, just to give a quick run through. So Sox met with Soto and Boris Thursday night in L.A. The quote is that from Red Sox stats that they're going all out to sign him, and Robert Murray has said that they love Juan Soto. Rob, your quote, you said that you are getting the vibe that the Red Sox are approaching the Juan Soto situation with the kind of intent that we haven't seen in some time from them. Before we go on, do you want to just like dive into that? Like people are going to want some context. Like, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, well, I needed more followers on Blue Sky. So I'm like, I'm going to tweet this out. This everyone is liking a lot of Juan Soto stuff. Like the things that I know to be true, the two things is that I can ask Joe Kelly about the Yankees, and he'll rip them, and also I can tweet about Juan Soto and people will freak out. But listen, I never tweet stuff out. I am of the school that I think a million times before I tweet stuff out, and maybe I'm even too cautious sometimes. But as things were piling up in my head, I was like, you know what? This is like how I really feel. This is how I really feel about this. Like, this is legit how I really feel about this. And so what is the best way to phrase it? And guys, I keep coming back to the 2004 Netflix documentary. And just bear with me. Like, I keep coming back to that. Because the thing that struck me the most about that was, is this honestly the same ownership group that is currently owning the Red Sox that we saw in that Netflix documentary? Because that was all like, we're going to, hey, whatever it takes, Schilling and Folk and A-Rod, whatever it takes. And then you forget that all the way through the Dombrowski era, they never lost out on free agents that they wanted. They never did. The guy, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong, but you have to go back to Mark Teixeira to find the last time they said, we really want that guy, we're prioritizing that guy, and they lost out on him. It just never happened. David Price, $40 million more than anybody else. It didn't happen. So then, obviously, it takes this turn where we're this is where we're sitting in this alternative universe for the last few years. And when Juan Soto's name came up, you know, it was like, you know, let's be honest, guys. At the beginning of the offseason, I remember even this, sitting up in the suite at the GM meetings a few weeks ago. And I forget what the topic was, but I said to Breslow, like, hey, listen, you know, like, oh, you're going to be more like you're going to sign Juan Soto. Like, you're going to tell us if you're going to sign Juan Soto, right? Like, I was trying to think of the most extreme absurd thing. That was the most extreme absurd thing at that time. And then all of a sudden, they're interested. They're taking meetings. And my point is that my biggest point with the intent comment was that I legitimately believe that more so than anything they have had done since the Dombrowski era, that they are going into this with the understanding that we are going to try to win this. And if you're saying that, you know that to even sit at that table, you have to ante up. There is a buy-in to this conversation, right? There's a buy-in. Everybody knows this. You aren't, unless you start with the $600 million at least, like there isn't, it's not, there's no meeting, none. So the fact that they had a meeting, that shows you that they're willing to spend the money. They understand what it will take. And then from there, you piece it together in terms of, well, okay, if you're willing to spend the money, do you have a legitimate chance? And I think all these teams that are involved in this all have a different case that can be made for them. And really, each of them are really different. And, I mean, we can get into that, like what the Red Sox case is. But I think that each of them are different, and we can't get inside Juan Soto's head to say, all right, let's say that everybody offers the same. What are you prioritizing? So, I mean, so anyway, that's a long-winded way of answering that question about the tweet. So there you go.
Brett Folt, I want to make it abundantly clear, because I think I understand what you're saying, but
you want me to repeat it? I can do it.
Yeah, can you do that whole – I want that whole 2 minutes and 30 seconds again. No. Does this mean that you believe the Red Sox are – legitimately willing to offer something in the ballpark of $600 million to Juan Soto?
Yes.
That same ownership that we've been crying about for types. I hope you're right. I believe you. My brain can't process.
Put it this way. Even though, you know, like Alex Cora couldn't confirm or deny that he went there. Let's be honest. Like he went there, right? So he's not going there, I don't think, unless they legitimately feel like that this is going to be a real thing. And I don't think that, you know, listen, Scott Boras can have this meeting and maybe he pretends to use it as leverage, but the Red Sox were never trying to get Shohei Ohtani, right? Because they were never going to spend that money on him at that time, even though they should have. But to answer your question, Sammy, yeah. Yeah, like I legitimately do, and they could say that about Yamamoto last year.
That's what I was going to ask you. But was Yamamoto, or on the scale of Yamamoto to Teixeira, like where does this fall? Because you compared it to Teixeira, and the way I remember, they lost
Teixeira. I mean, Teixeira was the one they lost.
But they lost Yamamoto too. If you listen to them, and yeah, the reports, but it didn't feel the same. I agree with you. It felt like Teixeira was an all-in.
It wasn't the same.
Maybe the scale.
I mean, it's like, think about guys it was a different time. I mean, you, and that's what I'm talking, coming back to. It's so bizarre to think about. That was ownership. Ownership was not going to lose out on guys they wanted. With Mark Teixeira, remember, they lose out to the Yankees. And then John Henry is so pissed about it that when the Yankees lose a few games in the middle of the next year, he tweets out, it must have been the curse of MT. I don't know if you guys remember that.
I don't remember that at all. He tweeted that?
Google it.
Yeah, this is why I get so mad at John Henry, because I used to like him so much. He was so cool.
Remember the Marlins thing?
It came back to backfire him in a spectacular way, because the Yankees ended up winning the World Series. But it was...
That's okay, he cared.
Google, yeah. I mean, yeah, exactly. Google that. I mean, think about that. It was... So that tweet said so much about that time. Where, number one, they were pissed they lost out to Mark Teixeira. Number two, there was this very real thing that Larry Lucchino had helped build of, which he also saw in the Netflix documentary, of we are going up against the Yankees, us against them. This is a very real rivalry, the evil empire and all of that. And, you know, and then we flash forward to the last couple of years. And like, oh, my man, wouldn't it be nice to live in the same stratosphere as the Dodgers and the Yankees and the Phillies and the Mets? Like, wouldn't that be nice? Like, this is – you're living in a total different tier here. But now it sure feels – and listen, they have lost the benefit of the doubt. But it sure feels like they are ready to get back in the tier that they used to be. But go – and I didn't even think of that tweet, like how that tweet was. And there it is, right?
For those listening, John at John underscore W underscore Henry tweet from July or June 11th, 2009. The MT curse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's MT. Fantastic. Oh my God. Right?
So the MT curse and again, they won the World Series. It was like, it blew up in his face, but it is amazing that you have John Henry tweeting that. Like understanding like the how much he cared about it across the board. So I don't think he's gonna be saying like you're the Juan Soto curse if it all of a sudden they miss out on Juan Soto and he goes 0-4 in a series against the Red Sox. No. But still it's there the biggest thing here is the biggest thing is the allocation of resources. And again, we can get into okay, what case do the Red Sox have once you have pushed, have shown that you're going to have a buy-in in this poker game? What case do they have? Because this is the other part of it that maybe I'm a little bit more optimistic than most, that I actually do think they have a compelling case for Juan Soto that is different than these other teams. Now,
if the money's equal, right? This is all under the guise that the money is equal, correct?
Yes. Yeah, I mean,
yeah, agree that he's not about to take less money than anywhere.
No, this is the money. This is money. Yes. This is all money. I mean, I'm sorry, it's all money. You know, assuming like you go back to Ohtani, right? You had the Blue Jays willing to pay the same as the Dodgers. What did the Giants? They were also ready to pay the same or something. I don't know.
I think got reported.
But anyway, the Blue Jays definitely they were willing to pay the same as the Dodgers, right? And then you go from there. And then you're like talking about giving tours of the Dunedin facility and whatever. I mean, but that's the point is that, you know, there, I think that, you know, when we look at the report Sean McAdam had about the meetings, the meeting they had and how there was no money. We think there was no money talked about. Well, because you know why? Because everybody knows that it's going to take a crap load of money. Like, that's not the point, you know?
Right. That could have been a Zoom call, the money part.
Yeah, hey, this team's offering this, this team's offering this, this team's offering this. You know, unless Dave Cohen wants to say, I'm going to offer $800 million, but once again, that'll be interesting to me because if we're going to go back to olden time for the Red Sox, they never lost out on free agents. You know why? because they were going to pay more. Go back, you know, how much did they, like, instances are popping up in my head, like Daisuke Matsuzaka. How much did they pay more in the posting fee than everybody else?
It was like 50 million. Yeah, it was like 50-something million, wasn't it?
But that's where I have pause, though, is because, yes, the Red Sox paid $40 million more than the Cardinals were willing to for Price. They paid way over for Matsuzaka. They did it with a bunch of guys. But it's always like tens of millions, 20, 30, 40 million. With this, to get a Juan Soto, you're going to have to pay more than the Yankees. You're going to have to match the Mets, and you're going to have to convince them that Boston is a better situation for him than the Mets.
Yeah.
Are they really going to be able to outbid the Yankees by like 20, 30, 40, 50, 60
Why
million
not?
Dollars?
Listen, the way that I look at it is that when you get to that level, it's like, you know, you got the money, you know, you have the money, like you, right? Can we all agree on that?
Yeah. You're not going to walk away at a couple million dollars at that point.
No. Like, everybody knows you have the money. You know that you know you're gonna, and believe me, you know, if they lose out, it's gonna be like, hey, listen, we offered the same, he just chose to go whatever. We're gonna hear a lot of that from, you know, probably all the teams, really. I mean, I doubt that whatever we hear from where these teams landed financially, it's not gonna be far off whether, oh, well, we offered more years and you offered more annual average value and whatever. Every team is going to offer a crap load of money. Now, what's really interesting to me is if that is the case, and maybe I'm completely wrong, but I don't think I am, then how does Juan Soto look at playing in Boston compared to playing in one of the two teams in New York or Toronto or maybe even Los Angeles? You know? So.
Does Toronto have a chance at this? Because I keep thinking of the benefits of each place. And obviously, you know, if you offer the most money, then you offer the most money, and that's the case. But with the Yankees, it's, you know, you've been there, you know the organization, you get to hit next to Judge and he gets to protect you. With the Mets, it's they've got the most money. You can bring a World Series to Queens. Maybe Lindor has some appeal. With the Red Sox, there's the Dominican history, playing at Fenway Park, which is literally built for his swing. And he grew up a Red Sox fan and loves David Ortiz and all that stuff. And obviously the top farm system. I don't know what the Blue Jays have because they don't have a very good farm system.
Didn't you say that about Ohtani last year though?
Yeah, but Toronto is an amazing city. I've never heard a bad thing about Toronto.
They matched the Dodgers offer. And so he picked the better situation.
Yeah, but it wasn't the fact that he never, that I can't, there was other team, at least another team, that was willing to go to that level, and
the Giants. You're right. It was the Giants.
And you know, I think that, and I do believe that, like the whole, like it was. I don't know how close it was, but they were in the car. Ohtani doesn't do what he does, and touring everything and all that stuff with the Blue Jays, unless like I think it was like a very real option for him. And so, Gordo, my point is that, you know, why the Blue Jays? Well, number one, you know, they've already shown that they're willing to pay $700 million for a player.
Yep.
And, okay, start right there. They know how to pitch, you know, think. Now, if we want to get into, you just rattled off a lot of the differences between the teams. I'm going to give you the Red Sox, a few of the Red Sox. You mentioned the Dominican thing, but more specifically, this is the guy that I talked to the other day, David Ortiz. He said, well, the one player in baseball that could be the next David Ortiz is Juan Soto. He's right. And that's the Red Sox know that. The Red Sox understand they need the next David Ortiz and Rafael Devers. Great player, but not that guy. They need that next guy. Bilingual, you know, obviously Hall of Fame player. Really, you know, has proven himself as a good guy in the clubhouse, a good example for younger players. So you have that part of it. The next David Ortiz, the Red Sox, that's how they look at it. And then from Juan Soto's point of view, not only can you be that guy, which you are going to be that guy with the Mets or the Yankees, right? You aren't going to be that. Judge is there. You're not eclipsing Judge. Lindor's there. You're not eclipsing Lindor. Like, that's.
Do you think he can't?
His personality. I think no Lindor's way. Personality
I think Lindor,
is.
I agree there.
I think but Lindor Soto has already. Lindor cemented balls. Himself this year, I think, as exactly what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. So you have that. And then the other part of it is, and I'm sure they laid this out as well, is that when you look at what the Red Sox are going to be and as this contract goes along, it's a lot more palatable right now than it is for these other teams. It is. Like,
definitely.
It is.
This is the benefit of them not spending for all these years, and now we're right. Here. I'm not saying it was a good thing, just saying.
Yeah.
Here we are.
Such a hypocrite.
I am.
So, Rob, there have been like various reports about money is obviously the most important thing for Soto because he's a Boris guy. Why would it not be? And then that face of the franchise thing. If that is true, do you think that's like more important to him than growing up the Sox fan, the Dominican heritage? Do you think that's his like 1B? Or do you think it's full landscape? What's the best scenario? Okay, cherry on top. I'm that guy.
Pat, like, I wish I could answer that. I don't. I know it starts with the money, and then I have to imagine it is how does he fit in? I'll say this. I firmly believe this, is that I think because of his love for the Red Sox growing up, because of his admiration of David Ortiz, I do think if I'm the Red Sox, that's the pitch I would have made to him, which is, you are the next David Ortiz in the city David Ortiz was David Ortiz. Right? I mean, that's, for me, I mean, that would be a powerful, powerful thing. I think, and you know, I think that, you know, I got a kick out of Ortiz telling me that, oh, yeah, you know, he couldn't make it out there, but he was hanging with Soto's mom and his brother, you know, like this great. There is a very real relationship there. And, you know, I don't think David Ortiz needs to go out to California to have a meeting, be in this meeting. Because I think if they live in the same complex, they're going to see each other anyway. Right. So, you know what it was like. In Fort Myers, we're recruiting the next door neighbor all over the place because we're living in the same Brookshire complex, right?
Right.
Rob, it's a very powerful thing.
On this meeting, one thing that came out, this hasn't been covered too much. You know, I'm a pretty big ADHD guy. I'm all over the place. When I was 26, even more so, was this meeting with 26-year-old Juan Soto really 3 hours long? Because I feel like that maybe condense it.
I don't know.
That's pretty, like, is there a benefit to it being that long, 3 hours?
You know, I have no idea. But I also hate these meetings where you do small talk for a half hour. Like every single meeting I've had to attend in my professional life, it starts off with this stupid small talk. And usually when it involves like people outside of your world, like salespeople or something, God bless them. I love salespeople. But it's like, oh, how do you think the Red Sox are going to do? Like, really? Like,
I don't know.
But so maybe there was an hour of small talk. I don't know. All I know is this. Like, I remember talking to John Lester about his meeting when, you know, they flew, I think, to his house, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. In 2000, after the 2014 season. And he said, yeah, they had a scrapbook.
You know, aww, like, that's cute.
But this is why all the other stuff – it all comes back to the money for me, because like, yes, like you can be the next David Ortiz. Yes. Like you can pepper the monster and hit 40 bombs a year. Yes. Like you can play with this incredible team. But if Steve Cohen offers 750 mil, he offers 750 mil. And that's the scenario I want to get into here a little bit, because obviously, you're right, Rob. For the Red Sox to have this meeting, for the Red Sox to have gotten to this point in the Soto sweepstakes, there is clear interest there, and there is an understanding of what it's going to cost on their end. I think that's great. If it doesn't work out, if they don't get Soto, first, is there a benefit to having met with the agents of guys like Blake Snell, Alex Bregman, Pete Alonso? Who am I forgetting? There's another.
Corbin Burns.
That's the big one. And do you think that do you think they're as all in on this offseason as everyone else seems to? Like, if they miss out on Soto, is it going to be like Yamamoto where, yeah, they were all in on the young guy, but when the young guy came off the board, they shut it down? Or if they miss out on Soto, is it going to be, okay, plan B, we're getting this guy. And hey, maybe next year there's another young guy that hits the market that's pretty damn good himself in Vlad Jr.
No, I think Soto's just an outlier. I think Soto's almost like a different budget, you know? I think that this isn't like, oh, well, we missed on one Soto, let's go get the next position player. No, yeah. I mean, I think that what Juan Soto does, along with being a great, great player, an iconic player, a player that there's no doubt about it, that's the guy who's at the center of your franchise, but he also gives you the path to potentially get what you really is, let's be honest with you, is the priority for this offseason, which is a top of the rotation, number one starter. Like, can we agree on that? Like, mm-hmm. Yeah. This isn't,
yeah.
Juan Soto isn't the priority.
He's not a need.
No.
You don't need him.
He's not the priority, but if you do get Juan Soto, you know, like, that you're going to trade one of these other lefty outfielders. You're going to, might trade him anyway, or maybe even Tristan Casas, and to potentially get a Garrett Crochet or someone like that, or, you know, a Seattle guy or someone we're not even thinking of. But still, that doesn't change anything. Sign Juan Soto, don't sign Juan Soto. The top priority for this offseason is still finding that number one starter.
So you talk about sort of the follow-ups to if you sign Soto, like maybe you trade an outfielder, maybe you trade two outfielders. I think one of the things that people aren't necessarily thinking about right now is what is the alignment if you get Soto? Because I agree, Soto's the guy that I don't give a shit about fit. You get the guy and you build the team around that caliber of a guy. Like that, he's just that good. He's mm-hmm. one of those guys. There aren't a ton of guys in the league that meet that standard, and he's one of them. But if you get him, what does it look like? Because he's not going to sign on to play DH. He's playing the left field if you sign him. So he's your left fielder. Jaron Duran, your center fielder, Sadon Rafaela, utility. Like,
I got a take on this after Rob.
Yeah. Well, I want to hear from everyone on this.
Because, go ahead, Sammy.
I truly don't know the right answer. I do know that it's not something that should stop you even for a second from pursuing the guy. But I'm just curious, like, what would the next moves be? If we're going to dream this dream, like, let's dream it.
I think they move Duran. If they get Soto, they move Duran. His value is never going to be higher. He's on a cheap deal. Like, they're not going to extend him if they get a guy like Soto. Rafael is already locked in. I don't know if Duran could really handle right field. Gordo, I know you don't fully agree with that, but right field at Fenway is just a beast. We can talk about that later.
I wouldn't put him in right.
Oh, okay. Never mind then. Sorry for putting words in your mouth. But I do think, like, if they sign Soto, it's just it would be simple. It'd be like Duran moves to, for example, like Seattle for one of their guys. I don't know who, but I think it's that simple because Soto's not a good defender. That's his weakness. If he has a weakness, it's his defense is a little bit below average. He's not like Yoshida out there, but he's, you know, not great. So I think they stick him in left field, kind of quote unquote hide him there, and then you move Duran while his value's high.
Pat and Rob, what do you guys think about it?
Pat, go ahead. I think what I would do is move Willier, and then with Soto's shortcomings in the outfield, he's in left field. He gets to play the short monster. Sadon in center, because he's just that good. That's kind of like a Story and Raffy situation. Sadon is going to make up so much ground for Soto out there. And then Duran has the speed, the arm. I have no qualms about him playing right field at Fenway. So
what about
I
Roman?
Personally would go Soto, Sadon, Duran, and trade Willier.
What about Roman, though, when that time comes? Because maybe he probably I'd say under 50% chance for opening day roster, but that's happening next year.
Yeah. So when that point comes, yeah, Sedan goes into that super utility role. Duran, then you just figure out who plays center. Both of them can do it between Roman and Jaren, but you just have to figure it out when that time comes.
Rob, what about you?
All right. Before I answer that question, I was just looking up net worth of owners.
It's batshit what Steve Cohen is compared.
Yeah, so it's like that's what we can't forget, right?
Yeah, it's bad.
And let's make this very clear. We begin with a statement, and we'll just keep that in people's minds. This is going to be about the money, right?
Yes.
This is going to be about the money. So you have the Steinbrenner family at about $3.8 billion. You have John Henry at about $3.6 billion. You have Steve Cohen at $15.9 billion.
So John Henry's broke is what you're saying.
He's broke. I mean,
let's
put up the QR code for people for the Venmo.
That's what Red Sox fans are dying for, is to give their money directly to John Henry. Not to the Red Sox, directly to John Henry. But what about Fenway Sports Group? Isn't that like 9.8?
That's a fair point.
I mean, 12.9.
Let's be honest. It's like, okay, you have the money anyway. Yeah. I think that the Duran thing. I don't trade Jaren Duran. Like that's neither the guy I don't trade. And here's the reason why. People forget Jaren Duran is a top 10 player certainly in the American League. He's a top 10 player. He's going to finish it. I think he's probably going to finish around, my guess is in six in MVP voting this year. And he is a legit leadoff hitter, which how many seasons have we gone in and said, who's going to hit leadoff? Well, so he's hitting leadoff.
Kike.
Oh.
Sorry.
So
that hurt.
But point taken, right? Verdugo. Point taken. So you have a legit elite leadoff guy, a dynamic player, a guy who hits for power, a guy who hits really for pretty decent average, a guy who steals bases, a guy who's gotten tremendously better in the field, a guy, you know, like he was put in a leadership position that maybe was putting cart before the horse a little bit this year, but still a guy that is learning to be a leader in a lot of different ways. I think that was a huge growth year for him in that respect last year. And so to find those guys, if you have that guy under how many more years of control does he have? Four?
Four.
Four.
Four, right? You don't trade that guy. You don't trade him.
I agree with you, Rob.
Like position players, Devers is here, Soto, Duran, go from there. That's it. And then you figure it out from there. But, you know, in terms of the other guys, figure it out. I mean, it's The Soto, this is one of the things. We had on Andy Martino of SNY on the Baseball's and Boring podcast. And he was really like, and obviously this is a guy who's seen Juan Soto play every day last year. The fielding is a very real thing. I mean, it's a very real problem. But how many times have we seen that? Well, just play left field. This is, as Ortiz said once again, Devers and Soto is Manny and Ortiz from the left side. That's what you pay for. It's not bad. It worked. They won two World Series. I don't know if you guys know that.
Can I tell you guys what I would do looking at a long-term?
Does it involve your dog pooping?
No, not this time.
Okay. Then proceed.
That's only for Max Fried, which we'll have plenty of time.
I hope they sign him and we'll tell him about it.
We'll tell him about the dreams. No, but here's what I would do. I agree with you, Rob. I'm not trading Duran. I think if you build a lineup with Soto in it, he crushes lefties and righties. So I don't need five lefties, four righties. You need three righties and a platoon. Your platoon can be the DH with Yoshida and Ref Snyder. You can have shortstop and Story, second base, whether it be Campbell or Grissom, and who am I forgetting? Wong at catcher? I don't know. Like, Your outfield long-term, Soto, Duran, Anthony and Wright. Sedan is a super utility who comes in and plays every now and then. I'm totally fine with that bat not being in the lineup every single day. I don't know about you guys. Like, I'm not sure how much I see it with the bat with Sedan. And bringing in Soto, leading to giving you an avenue to legitimately make him that super utility player that I think he'd be better suited for that role, because Duran would have to play center there. I don't think Duran can handle Wright and Fenway. I don't think he's got the arm for it. So it'd have to be that way because Soto's not coming to DH. I think that would be a good thing. It's like almost, I don't want to call it addition by subtraction because Sedan obviously has potentially more room to grow, but man, that's a dream worth dreaming right there.
You're moving, in this case, like we don't have to get super into this, but are you moving prospects for a pitcher?
I'm moving Abreu and I'm moving Marcelo Meyer because long-term you can't have another lefty. You'd have to move Marcelo or Teal.
I'm fine with that.
I think that's just,
My thing with Duran, don't get me wrong. I would say I think he might even finish better than sixth in MVP voting this year. He was unbelievable at everything. My thing with him is his success, and we've talked about this before, is largely predicated on his speed and agility as well. It's not just he runs fast, he's agile. How long does a guy maintain that? I don't know.
It's 4 years.
He's agile.
Like he's got quick, fast twitch muscles. Like he moved when he cuts,
and they're
cuts
tasty.
Around first base. That's doing like
defensive
that.
Slides.
What do you mean? What?
He's not doing defensive slides.
But he's terrible at taking routes to baseballs, and that
he's
quick
not.
Twitch helps him
Who
make
is?
Up for
Duran?
It. Duran?
No, Duran got great at it.
Routes?
Sam, come on. He was like 99th percentile.
Defense, yeah, but his routes aren't good, so it's like, how long does that last?
What are you talking about? His routes running to first base?
No. To 99th percentile. Defense he can't get to 99th percentile outs above average running bad routes to the ball. He fixed that. He used to have bad routes.
Steamer didn't like it. All the projections don't like
get
the
defense. Out of here with that.
Oh,
man.
Shut up.
I cannot. Go
you
away.
Sound like you're describing Jalen Polk, not Jarren.
Oh God,
don't you're know. Just talking like football terms.
No.
Jarren is a great major league outfielder.
On Duran, I think he's going to be really, really good for the next 2-3 seasons, and then I think he starts to slow down a little bit. How can
that's,
if he doesn't
that's
have
fine.
Speed?
That's when you have him for control is four years. I don't need him to be good for 7 years.
Gordo, can you look up if you're in Baseball Savant? Can we look up where he ranks in agility?
99th percentile agility confirmed.
The agility, you can't use that speed as well if you don't have good agility to go with it. They're different things.
I honestly am baffled like by what you even mean by agility.
So speed is how fast you can run. Yeah. Agility is how fast you can change directions and move.
Well, we just pointed out that he's like not he's elite when he became elite when it became to exactly what you're talking about.
He is 95th percentile in range, 95th percentile in fielding run value. His arm is way better than it used to be. Jeez, 87th percentile arm value and 75th percentile arm strength.
I think that's for left field, though.
But 75th percentile arm strength.
I want to come back to this is a wonky question for Sammy, but you had said that you think he'll finish above six for AL MVP.
Yeah, probably. Let me think. Like, if you go Judge, Soto,
Gunner,
Bobby Witt, Gunner, Duran. Yeah, probably put him fifth. Unless there's a pitcher who was unbelievable.
Jose Ramirez?
Give me Duran.
I think Duran, yeah.
Look it up.
I'd go Joe Ram.
I'm not saying I had a vote, but I had a vote.
Joe Ram is so underrated.
Oh, Rob. You're messing with Duran. You're messing with the candidacy, Rob.
Look it up.
Look what up?
Look up Jose Ramirez.
What is OPS?
Joe is so good. He is so,
Pat,
so good.
Can you tell, Pat, tell them, please.
People are just so numb to how great Joe Ram is that it's now underappreciated, and he is, like, by far the best third baseman in baseball. It, like, you look up his numbers, they will be better than Jarren Duran's.
Offensively, maybe, but he didn't provide the value on the bases or in the field that Jarren did.
Ah, but he swipes bags too.
What about WAR? These awards have turned into, I feel like, let's look at the WAR leaders.
He had a 6-point Robert, and listen, I mean, Duran's going to have a better WAR. What was Duran's WAR?
I'm going to pull it up.
Jose Ramirez was 6.8.
Oh, look at this.
Jaren Duran, 8.7.
8.7.
Yeah. But you're right. I mean, that's a lot of people immediately go to war.
Hold on. I need to get this out.
Ooh.
Baseball Savant has route running stats. Jaren Duran ranks 85th in Major League Baseball. Thank you very much. Thank you for listening. Take care.
85th out of how many?
Everyone. So he's like
1,000.
He's all right.
That sounds good.
But
no, there's a lot of guys ahead of him.
Can we go back to Jose Ramirez?
Hunter Renfro is better at
route. Jose Ramirez, 39 homers, 41 stolen bases.
118 RBI, 143 OPS plus. This guy's
a freak. Oh my God. Man, I feel bad for disrespecting Jose Ramirez. How does he fly under the radar every year?
By the way, his team won. Like, yeah. This stuff.
That's fair. That's a good point. I want to jump back to the Juan Soto stuff because this is the Juan Soto show. I want to think about what it would mean for the Sox-Yankee rivalry to see the Sox steal him from the Yankees. Can we dream on that for a sec?
What would that look like?
A-Rod revenge.
It might be worse.
Louis
Tiant revenge.
Yeah, but think about what are the Yankees without Juan Soto?
No, they're bad. I said this. Is that this is where it can get dangerous when it comes to the money part of it. Because of all these teams, there is no team. I don't think it's even in a question that needs Juan Soto more than the Yankees need him.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm.
They're legitimately not. Like, look at that lineup without him.
They're not
good. Think back to the Sox-Yankees games from this year. What the Red Sox would do to attack that lineup. They would, and granted, the Red Sox at times didn't have a lot of lefties in the bullpen, and certainly the quality of lefties was not what we hope it'll be next year. But what they would do was they would put a lefty in when the Yankees had like a lefty at the bottom of the order, and they would keep the lefty in through the top of the lineup. And if they were lucky enough, they could take the lefty out and put a righty in for Judge. But if not, they would prefer to throw a lefty to Soto and Judge than a righty to Soto and Judge.
The dynamic, the blueprint that the two World Series teams had when it came to what you can have at the top of the order. Like, that's what every team should strive for, right? You have to get through these guys. These guys. You know it's coming. So you're going to have to burn your closer in the seventh because these guys are coming up.
It's the Ohtani graphic. It's the Fox graphic. Mm-hmm. Six batters until Shohei Ohtani's up.
It's ominous for the pitchers.
That's how it was with the Yankees, right?
Yeah. Especially early in the season when they had literally just those two guys in the lineup.
Yeah, and that's honestly, that's how it used to be with the Red Sox. I mean, you go back to when Mookie was rolling, a big part of that was hitting in front of Devers. Benintendi. Well, Devers.
JD.
Yeah, Benintendi was, JD.
Bogarts.
Bogarts.
There was no room to breathe against that Red Sox team. 2018. I figure we're talking 2018 because we're talking good old days.
Yeah. But I can't even imagine what Yankee Stadium would be like if that happened and Juan Soto walked back into that ballpark wearing a Red Sox uniform. Crowd would do.
He would be the ultimate heel in New York City. That would be great for baseball. I think same with the Mets if he went to the Mets, but I'd rather Red Sox. Come on.
I don't think he gets the treat. I think if he goes to the Mets, the perception of it is, oh my God, yeah, of course. They threw gazillions of dollars at him. Like he took that. If he goes to the Red Sox, it's like, this motherfucker abandoned us. Like,
but also,
we got to show
like Mets, Yankees fans live among Mets fans. So they'd have to hear about it ad nauseum 24/7. That might even be more painful. I was actually talking to a friend of mine who's a Yankees fan who said he'd actually rather Soto go to the Red Sox than the Mets for that reason.
Well, that just shows you how far we've fallen because that cannot be their answer.
That was my response. That was my exact response. I was like, that's pathetic. We need to step it up as Red Sox fans and be just awful people like we used to be.
I dream though. I dream because it would be so hostile at Yankee Stadium that it would almost like Fenway Park would have to level up to match it. Like, it couldn't just be that Yankee Stadium is this death zone and Fenway Park is just like, oh, we're the friendly confines. Maybe there's like one fight in the crowd. No, like, we're going to have to step it up and match their hostility, match their assholeness. We have to show them that, yeah, we're dickheads too.
Gotta match assholes. What do we have for percentages? Is Soto coming to Boston? I feel like we're going to have a big variance here.
I want the three of us to go first so no one's influenced by Rob.
Okay. I have 1.5%.
Oh, that's low.
I just don't think it's going to happen.
I have it at 5 and I thought I was being pessimistic.
I was at 5 a few days ago, and then the more I think about it, the more I'm like, it's just not going to happen.
Did I sell you anymore?
No.
Rob, you make me think that if the offers are the same, they have a real chance. Like, a real chance if the offers are the same. But I keep going back to, what did we just talk about? The Yankees cannot lose this guy. The Mets have more money than God. This is their white whale. Those two teams have so much motivation. And then with the Red Sox, it's like, I'm glad that they really want the guy. But there's no, like if they don't sign Soto, there's other avenues that they can take to make this team really good. I just don't see them matching that motivation from the New York teams. That's why I'm so low.
Rob, you sold me on the Red Sox being aggressive more so than Soto to the Red Sox, I think. Because what Gordo just said, I just
good
can't.
Good way to put it.
Like, also, okay, 2.5%. I'll be half of 5%. 1.5 was too pessimistic. 2.5%, final answer.
Pat, let me hear it. Say 50.
All right, let me preface. I think the Blue Jays have like a 0.0% chance. Vladdy's not locked up.
Let me preface. I like you guys personally.
Yes. But I think the Blue Jays 0.0. Bichette's not locked up. Vlad's not locked up. We were god awful last year. Okay. I'm going 20%. But I'm giving Mets and Yankees 40 apiece.
Mm.
So you think it is literally just down to those three teams? There is no field.
I don't think there's a field.
Just wait till the Rockies come in.
Could you imagine breaking Bonds' record at Coors Field? Oh, my God, it'd be glorious.
That's his third 600-foot home run this year.
Listen, the 1-2 combination, Juan Soto and Charlie Condon. I love it.
Cool.
Don't forget, you can be protected by MVP Chris Bryant.
Ryan McMahon. So are you 5%, Gordo?
I am 5.
Or are you chained?
I'm 5. Pat is 20. I am 5. You are 2.5, but rising fast.
Well, I'm kind of up in that. I was 5, then I'm 1.5. Now I'm 2.5.
2.5. All right, Rob. The one we've been waiting for. Let's hear it. What do you got?
Yeah, I'm gonna copy, I guess, Pat. But this is how I felt even before he opened his mouth. 20%. Like a hard 20%. Like, I am locked in, so locked in on 20%.
Okay, now that you gave a number, that kind of.
And I think that right now the favorite has to be the Mets, because you just hear so many stories about Steve Cohen just not caring about money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I
also, with the Mets, like we kept saying, you could be the next David Ortiz in Boston. He's already been in New York. He would be the second guy to judge. The Mets, they haven't won anything since 1986. So he would be one of the faces of the first team of this generation of Mets teams to win. So that might be appealing. Who knows?
Yeah, but I think the 20% for the Red Sox, I think, is a really good number.
Okay.
I think it's a really good number. I mean, I do think ultimately that the money – we know the reaction to this, right? It's going to be, well, sure, the Red Sox did it, but they weren't willing to pay. Whatever, man. Like, if you're willing to pay over $600 million for a player, tip of the chapeau to you, man. Like, that's, yeah. Right? Along with, we aren't even talking about, you know, what else you're going to have to pay, because you're going to have to pay for some other things, although you're not trading for everything. So, but I do, to come back to it, I do think that Juan Soto money comes from a completely different bucket, right?
So let's get a vibe check then, Rob. So it feels like with Soto, your vibes are solid. on the overall offseason, vibe check from you. Because to me, like I said, Soto chance is 5%, but my vibes about the offseason are still really high. And I went into this offseason telling myself I wasn't going to put myself in a situation where I was going to get hurt again. I'm fully entrenched in the position of I'm going to get hurt if things do not happen.
The biggest lie of all time when you said that.
Oh,
it's like
God.
When you when we go to Fenway and you're like, I'm not going to eat a whole thing of gummy bears and get sick. And then you do.
Every single time. That's that's where I'm at. I've eaten the gummy bears. So my vibes are still high. I think if they miss out on Soto, I think there's big things ahead. I tweeted it today, but I don't think you tour a $5 million house with a $500,000 budget. And I understand that Soto's
That was very well phrased. Excellent.
Good metaphor.
Thank you. But I do agree with you, Rob. It's a different bucket. It's not like, oh, they have $600 million, $700 million to burn. So now that they've missed out on Soto, they get to spend $700 million on other guys. But they are going to spend, right?
Yeah. There isn't, position wise, let's be honest, there's not guys anyone would say, oh, you should absolutely prioritize that guy, right? Yeah. They need a right handed hitting, probably outfielder. All right, try to get Teoscar Hernandez. Doesn't work out. Get a Tyler O'Neill. Trade for somebody. But it's not like you're going to say, oh, we got to spend the Juan Soto money. No, it's just not. That's not how it's going to work. You could get a free agent pitcher that way, but the most expensive free agent pitcher, who's it going to be? Like Corbin Burns?
Burns, yeah.
Right. All right. There's $200 million. So big difference from $700 million. So, yeah. And I do think, I don't know. I mean, I don't know where they're going to land in the starting. It's we are just so narrowly focused on Burns and Snell and Fried and Flaherty and Crochet. And there's going to be something that pops up, probably one of these guys from Seattle who you're just like, oh, there it is. There's your answer. They just traded for Logan Gilbert. There it is. Like
Castillo. They're going to salary
dump. Luis Castillo. Yeah, Luis Castillo. But the point is that I legitimately think, and this isn't breaking any news or saying anything that I don't think anyone else hasn't been screaming, is that I legitimately think that their approach this year is going to be dramatically different from what we've seen in a long, long time. Again, coming back to the intent thing, this is the aggressive. You know, they said they're going to be more aggressive, but they also said, I keep repeating this, but his line, Breslow's line of we're going to be more decisive, like that's the one that I liked. More decisive. Like, you know what? Here's a small example of this, like it or not. You just allocated potentially $3 million to Justin Wilson. In a lot of worlds, that's like the equivalent. You're going to prorate that to David paying $40 million more for David Price. Some people didn't think he was going to get a major league deal. But you allocated $3 million, and people say, oh, you overpay. Who cares? If you like the guy, then pay for him.
And
who
you cares? Did it early, too. You did it early. They took no chances with that one.
And that's what they should have done last year. And I don't think Breslow probably gets signed off on it, but they should have done it with Seth Lugo.
Teoscar,
right? I mean, the term decisive was, for me, like that was the most refreshing thing that he said.
It's frustrating, too, because they talk about being on a budget, and when you wait and wait and wait, you lose your leverage as guys come off the board, and then you're kind of like forced to pay more if you just set the market. I feel like it's such an easier way to operate. You don't lose leverage like that, and you can, as Dombrowski used to do, get your guy. Which
worry
I feel
about
like
who you're kinda, getting.
I mean, for me personally, I'll speak for myself. When the Red Sox had Dombrowski, I feel like I took that for granted because I didn't foresee the Red Sox not spending after he left. I didn't ever think that would happen. It's the friggin' Red Sox, and he always got his guy. Of course he did. He gave them the most money. But now you look at it, that's impressive in hindsight, and you know, like, for me, as someone who we do this show, I'm a big baseball fan. That's like a learning thing for me, I'll say. Like that, like, should have appreciated Dombrowski while he was here. And I hope the Red Sox can get back to something remotely similar to that in terms of aggressiveness.
It really is. I've said this a lot of times, but it really is about identifying the guys that you want and going out and get them. And also what the Dombrowski way was, I'm going to get that guy. Oh, you know, you want four guys? Okay. One and a half of them are going to make the major leagues. And none of them are going to be as good as the guy that we just got back. Like,
right.
Craig Kimbrell, four guys. Chris Sale, four guys. And so for me, and that's what I sort of like what Breslow did at the deadline, in the sense that he gave up a crap load of guys, a lot of them, but he was sort of bargain basement, because all those guys that everybody knew they weren't going to protect him for the Rule 5. So it's not like you're giving up really guys of value. But if you can do that, and you can, and really, like, Heim did the opposite, right? He was a guy that got four guys back or five guys back. And that's the way a lot of these GMs are doing it. But if you can capitalize on that sort of market deficiency or that approach and say, yeah, you know what? You want to cover yourself with ownership by getting four guys back? Fine. You know what? We'll give you five. Who cares? As long as we're getting the guy back that we want. That's what Dombrowski did.
Right. Do you think, and I'm not asking like if you know who it is or anything, but do you think that they have that guy this year, or do you think it's like a pool? Because we talk, I feel like, about a pool of four elite starting pitchers out there: Burns, Fried, Snell, and a Garrett Crochet trade. Do you think there's someone in there that they like more than the others, or do you think it's going to be sort of a give and take? We're going to talk to all of these guys and kind of see what avenue's best, because they're all really good.
Another starter, you mean, other than the ones that you're talking about?
No. I'm saying, like, do you think that they have a target that they really like in those four, or do you think it's going to kind of be like it could be?
Yeah, you have to, right? You have to.
I mean, it doesn't feel like they've operated like that in the past. It feels like they've sort of identified a pool of guys and have said, you know, whichever one is kind of left sitting, you know, at the altar after everything's done in the offseason, we'll try to get him for a year less than we would have if we'd gotten maybe the guy we like a little bit more, but they're all in the same tier. These guys, I feel like, are in the same tier, but if you like a guy the most, are you going to go and get that guy, or are you going to be the team waiting around when Burns and Fried sign and now Snell's?
I think it's all relative, right? I mean, it's all like what you're – the group that you're talking about. With Chris Sale, he was an outlier. Like, Chris Sale was – better than anybody else you're going to get. I don't remember who else the options were, but he was better than anyone else you're going to get. David Price, the perception was he was going to be better than anyone else you were going to get. And we've already had sort of this debate about all these guys, about, you know, Burns and Snell and Fried and these guys, like, okay, which one is the best? Crochet, which is the best? You can make a case for all of them. But to answer your question, which one do they like the best? I couldn't tell you that. Like, the Snell thing that came out today as we're taping this, where would that come from? Oh, it was
Passan. Passan said that they're talking
Passan to... Passan said Cespedes Barbecue. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he said Fried and Snell.
And so you can't... They'll say it doesn't make a difference, but I got to imagine throwing from the left side is a feather in these guys' cap. Like, that is something that you would ideally like. And those are two really good options. And the Snell thing's interesting to me is, like, why they weren't prioritizing him last year or weren't really in on him. The Boris, I remember at the GM meetings last year, was going out of his way to say, you know who is a really good fit with the Red Sox? And remember, he had Jordan Montgomery too. And did he have someone else, another pitcher? Did he have...
I mean,
Bellinger. He had Matt Chapman.
Yeah, well, I'm talking the pitchers. So, but he said, you know who was a really good fit? Our, you know, models have suggested in Fenway Park is Blake Snell. Like, and I know that's agent speak, but it was interesting to me that, you know, he can say that, but he has to back it up, right? And so that always stuck in my head. When that comes out, like, I'm like, I don't dispute that. I like Blake Snell. So
he's got two Cy Youngs. It'd be fantastic.
It's also like
an incredible swing and miss stuff.
You know, like, what he is, right? You know what he is.
Yeah.
He for years has been, and I'll never forget it from Breslow's introductory press conference when he was asked, what do you value in pitchers? And he said, I want guys who can get swing and miss in the strike zone. And Blake Snell is continuously at the top of the league in that. His stuff plays with anybody, and it always has. Best pitcher in the league in the second half this year. It's undeniable.
Yeah, with a short spring training, too. He was behind the eight ball to start.
Yeah.
Who would you rather have, Snell or Freed? Go around the room.
That's...
We've talked about this a bunch in our group chat.
Yeah, are the contracts the same? Because
what's the contract?
Much like your dub pooping contract offers, please reveal it to the public. Don't keep it to yourself.
I would prefer Snell if the contracts were if there was a 2-year difference in the deals. Two or more years difference, I'll take Snell. If Blake Snell's getting 5 years and Freed is six, I'd lean Freed. I like Snell on a shorter term deal, I think, but it's marginal. It really is.
Here's the issue with Snell, and he's great. He averages 5.2 innings per start. That was last year. That's, and I'm you know, nitpicking here. He's a fantastic pitcher. So is Freed. So is Crochet. So is Burns. But we've talked about this a lot. When the bullpen gets burnt out, very bad. So I think if the contracts are the same, I think I would go Freed slightly, but I'd be thrilled with either.
I would also lean Freed. He gives you more depth in games. He's a guy who doesn't rely on velo. I think his stuff's going to age really well. That contract should be on the nicer side, where a guy like Snell, who relies on high velo and his off speed, the second he loses one of those, I don't think it's going to be great. Personally, I like Freed more than Snell. And I wouldn't even call it close. I think I very much prefer Freed.
Okay, that's interesting.
Freed averages 6 innings a start, roughly. Slightly over 6.
I do wonder, though, with the pitching, whatever they call themselves, the run prevention unit, run prevention, yeah, whatever. they love stuff. And if you go and look at Stuff Plus, I was reading Alex Spear's article this weekend and it really stuck out. And the point he was trying to make was that Nick Pivetta has better Stuff Plus than Burns, Freed, and Snell, I think, too. But Freed was way below all of them. So is Max Freed really going to be the guy that they give their first giant pitcher deal to when his Stuff Plus, and I think Stuff Plus is incredibly flawed, because if Nick Pivetta's Stuff Plus is significantly better than Max Fried's, then what is it really telling you? But if that's what they're looking at, are they really going to make him the guy?
Tough to say. I don't know. I think the Red Sox would probably prefer Snell for that. And by the way, Snell has better Stuff Plus than those four guys we've been talking about: Crochet, Snell, Freed, Burns, and it's a big gap. So it's not like they're like 1, 2, 3, 4. It's a pretty big gap if you're using that Stuff Plus stat that we, and we joke about it, but it means something to these teams. So should take it seriously.
It's interesting. You know, I was talking to one executive. We're talking about Crochet, and you know, oh, well, is he going to hold up? He said, "Listen, you sign any pitcher now, you're expecting that one of these years are going to be wiped out, right? Like, that's what you're expecting. Because everybody gets Tommy John. It's just the way of the world now." Mm-hmm. So, you know, I look at it like, well, which pitcher might be able to avoid that for the longest period of time? I don't know.
Crochet, baby. I mean, Crochet is my number one by far. I was just going off of the free agents.
Maybe.
Rob, let's rank out of the four guys that we were just talking about, and understanding what it takes to get them to into the equation. Rank who you would want: Crochet, Burns, Freed, Snell. Who would you want most to least?
I would want Crochet just because he's younger, number one. Yeah. Although the risk is still tremendous. I mean, as like he pointed out to me, like he's, you know, in the previous 6 years, including his college years, he had totaled 200 innings combined. Like, this isn't Chris Sale. You know, Chris Sale had 5 All-Star games under his belt.
Can't you spin this spin zone that and make it a good thing, though? Because so
I knew
many
this
these
is coming.
Because I'll say this over and over again. Every time I hear the
well, again, sure,
anything, It's like he has no mileage on his arm. That's great. Like,
sure, sure, but you know, it's, and maybe it doesn't make a difference. Is one of the things that we should have learned is like, all do whatever you can to get these guys to October. If you have a good team, do whatever you can to get them to October, and don't stress if you don't have to about the regular season. I know it's a simplistic way to look at it, but it's so important. Like, if you feel like you are a top-tier team, figure out a way to get – and that was one of the things that sort of drove me nuts about how they approached Tanner Houck and even Cutter Crawford last year. It's like, no, you don't build in rest by not pitching a guy an extra inning or a little less inning. No, you build in rest by giving 2 weeks off. You know, and we kept saying that about Tanner Houck, and he was fine and passing all the tests and everything else. But sure enough, what happened happened. And so, you know, I just look at it and I don't even know like where this relates in terms of what we're talking about. But I just like the idea of Crochet, the upside of Crochet. I like what Burns represents and just the workhorse stud pitcher. But once again, I feel like something bad is waiting around the corner with him. I like Snell because he's just sort of seems the guy, this sort of goofy guy who is going to keep pitching and doing really well and has great stuff and gets results. And also, like, Max Fried, people forget, like, how good he is, like, how legit good he is. Like, he is really, really good. Like, his production, which is the most important thing, forget about stuff plus, his production is great. So I'm going to go with – I'm going to go with Crochet, Fried, Snell, Burns.
Ooh, Burns last.
Yeah, wow. But that's
Burns, yeah.
You know, and that's unfair. Like, it's I'll probably a
They're
year
all
from
great.
Now be like, that's the dumbest list of all time.
No, know? I mean that's
well, the beautiful thing. It's so interchangeable. They're all terrific. Like, exactly. If the Red Sox end up with one of those guys, like, I get that we're all wrapped up in Juan Soto right now, but if the Red Sox end up with one of those guys, like, think about what Red Sox fans have endured in the last like six off seasons. Getting one of those guys, that's a huge dub. Huge
dub. The small part about Corbin Burns, which I love, which means zero probably. I believe he was the only pitcher to pitch. Did we mention this? He was the only pitcher to pitch eight innings in the postseason.
Oh yeah.
Eight innings, one run. And my point is that he did that in October while everyone else was, well, most everyone else was running on fumes. Mm-hmm. I like that.
It's a good point. It's a good point, and it matters. And it matters because Max Fried hit or miss in the postseason. I want to say I was looking at his game logs. He had a lot of success early in his career in the postseason. Lately, like this year, wasn't that great. Snell didn't make the playoffs this year. Crochet obviously hasn't pitched in the playoffs. And then obviously we were talking with Ian Brown and he referenced something David Ortiz said at the Pedro Gala, which was you got guys here that haven't had success in the American League. Like that's another thing. Like Max Fried, he's been on the Braves his whole career. You've got Corbin Burns who just had, I know he didn't make it into the top three. Maybe he should have, but a Cy Young caliber season in the AL East, that means something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also say this is that one of the things that I've thought a lot about, you know, since the postseason, and I forget who brought it up, but I thought it was a good point, was this idea of like 200 innings, right? I think that Manaea crept over 200 innings total, but you know there was no Zach Gallen pitching 240 innings anymore, right? There was none of that. And I think that in the World Series, of the two World Series teams, the most innings any one of these pitchers, starters pitched, was Carlos Rodon at like 184. Now you say, well, that's not a lot, but here's the thing to keep an eye on, which is the day and age, this day and age of pitching, that 184 might be the equivalent of 220 because mm-hmm. everything is throw harder, mm-hmm. spin more, all of it. And I think that's a very real thing.
You prorated the innings.
Yes, I did. I am the best prorator of innings of all time.
You let it be said and be done.
Let it be done.
So we're running. I mean, this has been an awesome episode. I've loved it. But we gotta ask you one last question to wrap this up. Predict the Juan Soto contract. What's the number gonna be?
700.
The big seven.
Wow. The big 700.
I mean, what was it? The Carlos Carlos Baergas. I give Carlos a little credit. He hits more than he misses, right? But what he said, the Mets were 660, something like that.
Yeah. Walked in and said 660.
All right. That's
Mike Francesa said
the. No, wait.
Okay. What do you got?
What did you just say? Mike Francesa.
Say his name.
Mike Francesa?
No. No, you said it right. I'm just like, that's an odd baseball insider. Whatever you're going to say next.
He said, and I admittedly didn't watch the clip I've been meaning to, but he said that they've got a $702 million contract up their sleeve.
702?
That's what he said.
It's a weirdly specific number, Francesa. Is that not how you pronounce it? Rob keeps laughing when we say the name.
No.
I've never said it out loud in my life.
No. It has nothing to do with how you're saying the name. It's just like.
He's not a baseball.
I was like, is it Francesca?
No, you're right. No, you're right. Yeah, you were correct. Don't be so insecure about your Mike Francesa pronunciation.
Francesa.
It's just like, I will, if we had the FanDuel odds of like what Mike Francesa breaking the Juan Soto deal, I think it would be like, you know, 120,000 to one.
Plus 120,000.
Love it.
I would put a dollar on it.
Hey, he's from New York. You never know.
He's got the scoops, Rob. 700 mil from Bradford.
I am taking Rich Keefe over Mike Francesa.
702.
And you think the Mets are your favorite as of right now?
Yes. Money.
If it gets to 700, I'll take the Mets too if it's getting to 700. I was going to say like 675 to the Yankees, but I don't know.
Well,
Anyway. Rob, we're going to have you back soon because it's far from over. I know like we think, free agent takes meetings and then signs immediately. That's not going to be the case. Meetings.
I offered you guys to get on the baseballs and boring private jet to go to Dallas. Like, it's going to happen in the winter meetings.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I think at the winter meetings or shortly before. But it's going to be a hell of a, what is it, 3 weeks? 3 weeks we got until then? Three weeks. Yeah. So we got some time, plenty of time to talk Juan Soto. Even if the Red Sox don't sign him, thank you for throwing us a bone and letting us talk about it, dream. And even if they don't get him, we'll have dreams to dream after, especially about Max Fried.
And your dog.
And my dog. But Bradford, we appreciate you jumping on with us. This has been episode 152? 152 of Play Tessie. Comment, rate, subscribe wherever you're getting your podcasts. 5 stars. Subscribe. Check us out on YouTube on the WEI channel. You've got a Play Tessie playlist there. You can see all the videos. Hit the thumbs up there. We really appreciate it. And follow us on the socials at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. Also follow Baseball Isn't Boring at BB Isn't Boring on Twitter, and Bradfo is at Bradfo on Twitter and Blue Sky, which I'm now on but not using, but I'm on it.
Same.
I'm not doing it.
I just cut and paste everything from Twitter.
I'm on Blue Sky solely for Red Sox stats. I think I follow Rob, Alex Beer, and Red Sox stats. That is it on Blue Sky.
I joined it and I didn't want to start posting and then stop. So I'm giving it time because, God, I don't want to have to freaking post twice. But at the same time, if Twitter dies, like I'll be there. But I'm on it. We're all Sammy will get on it.
I'll get on it when it gets more popular.
Get on it, but don't post. Just get on it so people, when they're like finding people, I joined Blue Sky. Let me find all the Twitter people so they can search you and find it.
Maybe. All right. Yeah, fine. I'll do it.
I hope Twitter doesn't die. I admittedly hope it doesn't die, but
I hope it
whatever.
Does.
Appreciate you guys tuning in. Rob, we really appreciate you joining us. This has been an awesome, awesome episode, and we're just excited to see how the rest of these sweepstakes play out. But until next time, this has been Playtesty episode 152. Thanks for tuning in. Peace.
Yay, base.